are listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey, all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 123. Today's show is a Q&A episode where I answer listener questions. But before we get there, I want to tell you about the last episode. It's a story of an NFL star who ended up living on the streets of New Orleans and the photojournalist who found him on a hot and humid July afternoon. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy the story, whether or not you have any interest in the NFL. Today's episode is sponsored by Liz Wood Realty. Look, the most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. And if you're ready to make the move, you're going to need a good realtor. That's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. New Orleans is a terrific city, y'all, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. And Liz makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Several members of our community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. The other thing that sets Liz apart is what she does after she helps you find a home. She really does a great job of building community and helps you get connected with other people in your new area. When you're ready to make New Orleans home, reach out to Liz. I'll also put a link in the show notes to an article Liz wrote about moving to New Orleans and why sometimes renting is the best first choice. Today's show is also sponsored by our Patreon supporters. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, and the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. You can find out more at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst, and we'll have a link in the show notes. But for the price of a cup of coffee or a beer, you can help me continue to share my love of my lens of New Orleans with you. And if you join at the $10 level or above, we'll mention your name on the show, like our newest members, Steven Setafrati and Travis Shepard. Finally, today's show is brought to you by Workplace Solutions. Workplace Solutions offers furniture and technology products for corporate, education, and healthcare environments, plus individuals too. They have partnerships with Steelcase and Microsoft. Workplace Solutions creates spaces that expand employee creativity and productivity through transformation of the everyday workplace experience. Let me tell you, I just got a sit-stand desk from Workplace Solutions to use in my home office. And if it sounds a little echoey, it's because I'm still building out the home office. But this desk is fabulous. I can sit, I can stand. It's got an easy-to-use electronic controller. It's got a walnut top. It looks beautiful. And I struggle with back problems. And so being able to get up and adjust my position constantly throughout the day has already been a game changer. So if you are interested either for yourself or maybe you own a business or you're part of a big office, check out what Workplace Solutions has to offer, particularly in a COVID environment where we're having to change the way we think about offices and workplaces. It really makes a difference. So links to them as well as to all of our partners can be found in the show notes today, which again will be over at beyondbourbonst.com. With that, let's jump into your questions. And again, if it sounds a little echoey, it's because it is. I'm working in a half-finished office that's pretty empty right now. So the way we do these questions and answers is that I take questions from our Patreon supporters. They go to the top. They get priority. I also go into our Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street Crew, K-R-E-W-E, and I ask for questions and grab those. So we have about a dozen and a half questions, and we'll jump right in. First up will be our Patreon questions, and the first one comes from Donald Tatera. With Louisiana having had a record 5 hurricanes hit this year, is it still a safe place to move to and live? Or due to this fatigue or long-term residents finally moving elsewhere? Your thoughts? Well, thanks for the question. So I don't think it influences whether to stay or leave. I can't speak as a native. I can't tell you what it's like if you're not and your decision to move. But the way I think about it is that there are natural disasters all over the country, right? My wife and I, Marie, we've lived in a bunch of different places. And so, you know, there's there's Tornado Alley, then out west, and sometimes on the East Coast, you have to deal with disasters like earthquakes. Out west, you have to deal with fires. I think every place has its unique things. You get the floods in the Midwest and sometimes the upper Midwest. You know, you get severe weather in the Northeast. I don't think it's really influenced that much. I think it does affect the wetlands and coastal restoration, and I need to do a show about that. And I have a couple shows coming up that'll kind of deal with that on the edge a little bit. But it certainly doesn't affect us. I think what it does do is force you to think about what your plan is. So are you going to stay? Are you going to evacuate in your home? How do you deal with, you know, what if there were water? So where do you keep things that are valuable, and what's your plan for that? I will say it's been an exhausting year, and New Orleans was very lucky until Zeta, and then Zeta was a direct hit. And even then, it was so fast moving. While it did a fair amount of damage, generally speaking, in New Orleans, what we worry about is water and flooding. And will the levee system hold and the pumping system hold? And because it went so fast, we didn't have to worry about that so much. Let's see. Number two comes from Joseph Grillo or Grillo. How are, okay, it's kind of a similar. And I should mention, I don't really go through these ahead of time. I just cut and paste them. So you're getting my reactions kind of in real time here. Joseph asks, how are real estate prices affected by hurricanes? Is there a national trend due to COVID to move out of the city into the suburbs? Is what he's saying. Is this happening in New Orleans? Are real estate prices going down at all? Just wondering if this might be a good opportunity to buy a city property. Thanks. Well, there's a lot of questions there, Joe, but the basic answer is I don't know that real estate prices are really affected by the hurricanes, except that when there is flooding, then I think that people think twice or think about whether or not, you know, what that's done to the property. I think it affects individual properties in terms of if a neighborhood flooded, then you have to make a decision about that and what's the likelihood of the flooding again. But I think in general, in New Orleans, housing values have been on the rise pretty significantly. And so it kind of gets back to Joseph's question, or Donald's question, Joseph. I think that, look, if you love New Orleans and you want to move to New Orleans, it's always a good time. But I haven't seen a dip in the market, certainly not due to hurricanes. And if anything, I think the markets continue to rise post-Katrina, just because I think a lot of people got exposed to New Orleans. Many people came to volunteer. Many people took an interest. Many people said, hey, this is a city I've always wanted to live in, and maybe now is the time. And it feels to me like that trend has just continued. Before Katrina, I would say that New Orleans was relatively affordable, and these days it doesn't feel like it so much, but if you're coming from an expensive area, it may still seem affordable to you. It feels like a lot of the people that I meet through the podcast are people that, for whatever reason, came from higher value areas. Like I've met a lot of people, a lot of listeners to the show that are from California, and if you're moving from many parts of California, then it still feels affordable. So, you know, I don't think that there's a dip because of hurricanes, but I do think it's always a great time to move to New Orleans. And, you know, that's why we have Liz Wood as a partner. And we also have, side note, we just brought on board another partner, Tommy Manzella, over at Gulf Coast Bank and Trust for mortgages, because so many people ask about that. And we're currently refinancing our own mortgage. And so I reached out to Tommy and said, hey, I think this is a good fit. And it's because so many people are buying, but I don't necessarily think there's been a dip in values. In fact, I think it's kind of the opposite. Let's see. Question number three comes from Melissa Walker. She says, I'd love to know if there's been any talk of Mardi Gras being canceled next year. And also, has it been canceled in the past? So there has been some talk. I know that the captains of the carnival organizations have been meeting regularly with the mayor's office. There's been no official announcement. I think two or three organizations have already announced that they aren't going to parade. But in terms of overall, there hasn't been anything from the city, and I think it's a little too early. Probably the best source is Arthur Hardy. He was a guest a long time ago on the show, but he is the longtime sort of Mr. Mardi Gras. He runs the Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide. And I think he would tell you right now that there's a lot of rumbling, but there's no decision yet. If I were going to look into a crystal ball, I cannot imagine that we're going to have a standard Mardi Gras without a vaccine. Given there was so much concern about New Orleans being a hotspot or maybe Mardi Gras being sort of a super spreader event, I just cannot imagine. But I also think we'll definitely have a carnival season. We'll definitely have king cake. You know, we're a creative bunch and a celebratory bunch. There'll be some sort of Mardi Gras, but we may not have traditional parades. That's just my guess. So stay tuned on that one. Number four, Michael Kaufman asks, you have probably mentioned it before, but what got you started in podcasting? And do you have any favorite podcasts that you enjoy? Thanks so much for being an ambassador to your great city. Oh, thanks, Mike. Let's see. What got me started? Well, what got me started was seeing I really love podcasts. And I was watching a national coverage of Mardi Gras one year. And it was the typical Bourbon Street and all of that. And I got really frustrated with that image of New Orleans and of Mardi Gras as being simply people getting drunk and flashing their breasts for beads on Bourbon Street. That's not the typical Mardi Gras. That's not the Mardi Gras most of us experience. And so I really kept thinking about there's so much to New Orleans beyond Bourbon Street. And that just kind of turned into the podcast. I also saw that there wasn't really anything like what I had in mind. And I thought maybe there was a business opportunity as well as an opportunity to share my love of New Orleans. I wasn't sure if anyone would listen besides my mom. Thanks, Mom. I know you're listening. But it turns out that there's a whole community, and that's been a really great thing. And let's see, you ask, do I have any favorite podcasts that I enjoy? And so I'm going to look at my podcast app real quick and see what's in there. I listen to way too many podcasts. 99% Invisible by Roman Mars is a terrific show. It's really about sort of the design and the aesthetic of things, typically everyday things that maybe we don't think about the design of. I think that's a great show. I like the Anthropocene Reviewed, which is kind of a nutty podcast where he takes two different topics that have nothing to do with each other, like cholera and the chimichurri, and he rates them both on a 5-point scale. I think that's just really interesting. Avery Truffleman has a show called Articles of Interest, which is about the history of things, primarily clothing, that I think is pretty good. Liz Covart has a wonderful show called Ben Franklin's World. So she looks at things both through the lens of Ben Franklin's time, as well as through that lens looking at today's world. I think that's a really good one. Death, Sex, and Money by Anna Sale is always thought-provoking. Recently, I've been listening to The Edge, which is about the Houston Astros cheating scandal. And then I listened to one called Focused by a network called Relay FM. And that's sort of a productivity, simplicity kind of show. I could go on and on, but those are just a few. I'm scrolling to see if anything else jumps out. Oh, also, there's a show called Podcast We Listen To by my friend Jeremy Collins. And so that's interviews with other podcasters. I was actually a guest on Jeremy's show. He has a huge Facebook community of something like 30 or 40,000. And it's comprised of both podcast fans as well as podcasters. And I think Jeremy does a really great job with his show. So that's several. I could go on and on. I have about 35 here. They cover all kinds of things from productivity and business to podcasting. I like a lot of history shows. And I like some things like the Anthropocene Reviewed and 99% Invisible, which are just thought-provoking and a little bit more in the entertainment scale for me. So thanks a lot for that, Michael. Let's see. Number five, although it's really about probably number 10, the fifth person, I guess. Michelle Minotti asks, okay, so maybe a funny question. What's your best pothole story? Either I didn't see it and it hit so hard and my soul left my body story, or an eternal pothole that's always been there and keeps being a source of entertainment. Well, living in New Orleans, potholes are just an everyday occurrence, and you just get to know where they are. So probably the one that sticks out to me is I once hit a pothole so hard that my nose started bleeding. And I guess it was just from like right at the moment that I hit it, my whole body tensed up, I guess. And I guess I must have squeezed something in my head so tight that a blood vessel popped and I had a nosebleed. I don't remember where it was. I remember the car. I was driving a 1978 Buick Skylark. It was white. It was my first car. And I remember hitting that thing so hard that, again, my nose just started bleeding. I wish that potholes weren't a thing, but they definitely are in New Orleans, and they seem to be getting worse and worse. So thanks for that. That's a funny question. Number six, Lisa Johnson asks, have you ever been to the Mother-in-Law Lounge? Of course I've been to the Mother-in-Law Lounge. That is the place that it's called Ernie K. Doe's Mother-in-Law Lounge. It's now owned by Kermit Ruffins. It's on Claiborne Avenue, right under the overpass. Lately, Kermit has started a GoFundMe to keep it going because with all of the difficulties with COVID and opening a place, he's struggled a little bit, and that would be a real loss to the music community, not only the history and Ernie K. Doe and his wife and then Kermit Ruffins, but it's a great music venue. It's small. Kermit is a great cook and often has free food in there, whether it's barbecue or red beans and rice, and it's just a neighborhood joint. It's great. I think probably the last time I was there, which has been quite a while now with COVID, I saw the Soul Rebels perform. Terrific band. It's just a great spot. So yeah, if you ever get the chance, definitely check out the Mother-in-Law Lounge. I normally drink water, but it's so early in the morning. It's about 5:15. I'm drinking coffee this morning. Number seven comes from Wendy and David Friend. How are the buskers doing during COVID? I know lots of musicians like Glenn David Andrews, Kermit, and John Cleary are doing online stuff, relying on tips and doing local porch gigs, but how are the other guys? I don't know specifically, but they have got to be hurting. I ride my bike a lot in the French Quarter right now, and there's just not a lot of people. There are some tourists, and the buskers are out, but they cannot be doing well. I mean, it's just a volume thing. There's not a lot of people. I think it's also a great time to those that have adjusted and gone online. Look out for those. John Cleary, you mentioned, he has a Patreon account like mine, and I'm a patron of John Cleary's. He does a lot of sort of teaching musical styles and music that you know in front of his piano. So it's really great. Like if you ever wondered about a certain beat or the way that Dr. John played versus the way Alan Toussaint played, you can see all of that in his live broadcast. I think in general, people are hurting, right? I mean, live music just doesn't exist, even outdoors. If you don't have the crowds and the tourism, then the buskers don't have audiences in front of them. Number eight comes from Travis Shepard, who says, wow, okay. What would be your last drink instead of your last meal? Where and why? Boy, that's a good question. I think it would be an old-fashioned, a bourbon old-fashioned, and I think it would probably be on my front porch just because I have a great view of oak trees and sort of life passing by, and in the distance you can hear the rumbling of the streetcars and some of the river traffic. But it would definitely be a bourbon old-fashioned. If I were going to have it in a bar, I don't know where I would have that drink, actually. I don't know. I'm a little stumped. I think it really would be on my front porch just because I think it's a great spot. Interesting question there, Travis. Let's see. Ellis and Bolden asks question number nine, another one about moving. For people considering buying a home in New Orleans, how much does flood zone factor into the consideration? Areas that flooded after Katrina, like Lakeview and Mid-City, have repopulated. Assuming levees hold, that's a big assumption, and the home is somewhat elevated, do people just pay for flood insurance and hope for the best? You know, this gets back to the earlier questions. I think that you have to consider the area in terms of does it flood a lot or did it flood in Katrina, and the circumstances that happened there with the levees failing, how confident are you? So Lakeview, you mentioned, is an area that was in between two levees that failed, and so it filled up and flooded just to an enormous amount, 14 feet in some places. The home that we live in now had about 4.5 feet of water, and two blocks away there was no water in the houses. And so we bought this home after Katrina, precisely because our calculation was we don't think it will be a problem. It was, you know, it was due to a combination of factors, and we don't think those factors will happen again. I think that for the most part, people think about it. It's one factor. It's why having a realtor like Liz really matters. But at the same time, I think it's just part of the sort of fabric of New Orleans. It just comes with being in the city, and you kind of have to decide. In general, the closer you are to the Mississippi River, the less likely you are to flood. But we are, you know, half the city's above sea level by just a couple feet, and about half the city's below sea level. And so it's just part of the calculation. I know for us, we haven't worried about it too much. We do have flood insurance. And to me, even if you're not in a required zone, it's really the smart thing to do. It's not that expensive. And so I think people think about it, but it's supply and demand and economics, right? And so Lakeview was really unaffordable to a lot of people before Katrina. And then you had a reset after Katrina where there was at least a moment where it became affordable and people moved in. And I think you're seeing that in areas, you know, there's still areas that aren't as populated as they were before Katrina. And so those become buying opportunities, but with that comes the risk of flooding, right? And so I think the long and the short of it, Ellis, is that people think about it. I can only speak from my experience. Again, Liz would be a great one to talk to about that. But I think people take it into account. It's certainly important. It's an important factor. But it's almost impossible to avoid if you want to live in the city. So you just have to kind of judge your risk and take the appropriate precautions with insurance. And I would tell you that in our house, we just think about what goes on the first floor. So whenever there's a storm, I go around and check to see, are there photographs, are there memory type things that are on the first floor? And if they are, we move them. And I am sorry, that is my second alarm telling me to get up because it's now 6:30 in the morning, but I have been awake for quite a while. So I apologize for that. So yeah, that's my answer to that one, Alice. Okay, now we move on to questions that came from the Facebook group, although I think several of these actually are patrons. Matt May asks, what's your favorite touristy thing to do in the city? I love the bike tours, and I know Matt is a big bike rider. He also works with Chad Almquist over at Canoe. I always screw this up, Matt, I'm sorry. Canoe and Kayak over on the North Shore. We did an episode with them a couple years ago. They did these great tours at the time of the Bayou, and now they do kayak rentals as they're hoping to get back to kayak tours. My favorite touristy thing, I still like wandering through the French Quarter and looking around. I don't know that I do things that are necessarily touristy. Eating beignets, if that counts. I feel like that's a birthright, so I still do that. Riding on the streetcar, which to me, all those things don't feel touristy, but I suppose they are popular tourist things. And the museums, you know, when the museums are open, I enjoy going in because there's always something new to see and something new to learn, often that I get to share with you. But probably streetcars would be the thing. Riding on a streetcar never gets old to me. John Nordyke asks, question 11. Richard Campanella, has he written about Acadiana, like a deep dive of the Cajun region? I love his work, and I'm either really bad at Google or just not sure. I don't think he's done one on Acadiana. The book that probably comes to mind for me is a book called, about the Bayou Teche, T-E-C-H-E. I need to do a book. I mean, I did an episode about Tabasco and Avery Island, which is in the heart of Acadiana. I probably need to do one specifically about the that region, and it's been on my list to do one about the Acadians. I really secretly, not so secretly, want to do one where I go up to Nova Scotia and do some research and interviews there, and then also talk about Acadiana here, and I just haven't gotten to do that, and now with COVID, that's even more complicated. But I don't think Rich has done one there. He just released a book about the West Bank of New Orleans, so I think he's up to something like 14 books. I'll have to check that, but I don't think he's done one specifically about Acadiana. It feels like that might be a little out of his wheelhouse, since he likes to focus specifically on New Orleans, though. But John, thanks for the mention there. It's a good idea for me to dig in a little bit and maybe do some more about Acadiana. Megan McGinnis Moore asks, what are the best restaurants to eat at on Thanksgiving? That's a really hard question this year because we just don't know what's going to be open. What I would say is focus on the higher end restaurants and see what's going to be open. So places like Commander's Palace and some of the old line restaurants, Arno's, I think has already announced that they're going to be open. I would assume Antoine's will be open. So I would just first think about your favorite New Orleans restaurant or some of the higher end restaurants and reach out to them and look. I think that we're going to see some of the bigger ones that have space so that they can accommodate, whether we're at 25% or 50% occupancy, can do some limited things. You might also think about takeout, depending on if you're here in New Orleans or you've rented a place. Typically, Frank Brightson over at Brightson's does a takeout Thanksgiving menu, and I would imagine he'll do that this year. So that could be wonderful, even in a hotel room. You know, you probably need some way to heat up some things, but that might be a way to go. And even though we're just a couple weeks out from Thanksgiving, I just think it's such a fluid situation this year. Louis Rolong asks several questions here, so let's go through them. First up is, what is your favorite episode? I assume he means of my own podcast, and I think the easy answer is the episode with my dad about the history of the po' boy, and I don't have the list in front of me. I think it was episode 6. I did that for selfish reasons. I mean, one, I really wanted to do something about po' boys, but it was a chance to get my dad on recording, and he is certainly an expert when it comes to the history of the po' boy and that type of restaurant. Side note there, Mom, I know you're listening. We need to come up with a topic and get you on the show so that we get you recorded as well. Probably that one, although I feel like it's a little like children. Almost every episode I do, as soon as I'm done recording, I wonder how good it is. And then when I release it, I'm really happy to have done that topic or to have met that person. The last one we did with Ted Jackson about Jackie Wallace, the NFL player who was homeless, was really a neat show. The episode I did about the upstairs lounge is one that I was really, really proud of. So, you know, we're 123 episodes in. Again, if I had to pick, I would pick the one with my dad, but there's been plenty that I'm proud of and that I enjoy learning about the topic. What has been a fan favorite that you might not have expected? I got to say, the ones about moving to New Orleans, I really didn't think when we did them, I thought that was going to be very popular for a very small audience. But time and again, the questions that we get are so much about moving to New Orleans that those two episodes, I think they were 48 and 50. One was with a realtor, Chris Smith, and another was with a handful of our community members that had moved to New Orleans. Now it's been a couple years. And those are consistently popular shows. You know, and so that's probably time for an update, actually, to do that again. But that's certainly ones that I might not have expected. There are others, when I did them, I knew they would be popular. Let's see. Lewis also asks, what is an aspect of your city that the podcast made you see differently? This is a little bit outside that question, but when I did the episode about the Whitney Plantation, it really made me think about the lives of the enslaved and made me see New Orleans as well as our surrounding area in a different lens and one that stuck with me. So what I mean by that is that Whitney is the only plantation today that is focused solely on the perspective of the enslaved. So there's nothing about the big houses and the grandeur and the hoop skirts and any of that. It's entirely about the individuals that were enslaved there and what their lives were like. And so what it did for me is made me think not only about that, but as I wander through New Orleans, just in my everyday life, I will see a marker or a walk past where I know there was a slave market or even the grandeur of the Garden District and think about the fact that that was on the backs of the sugar industry and therefore the plantations and slavery. And so that one episode really caused me to have a different view almost on every aspect of my city and of my state. Luis then switches kind of tacks and says, this is more technical. Is there a piece of equipment that has made your podcast better? What is it and how does it help you? Without a doubt, it's a portable recorder. So until recently, I used a piece of equipment called Zoom H5N. It's a portable digital recorder. And the reason it was so important, and still kind of is for me, is that I've done most of my episodes in the wild, if you will. So when I interview someone, I usually ask them where they'd like to meet. And then we do it wherever that might be. So it might be a restaurant, a bar, someone's home, a business, a restaurant. We've done it in a park. The most recent one with Ted was actually in a park because we could still socially distance. And so that piece of equipment really allowed me to put my entire recording studio in a backpack, actually one made by Chop Industries, but put everything in a backpack and go where the person wanted to go. And one of the things that's unique about that is when you do that, I feel like you put the guest at ease and you also learn a little bit about them based on what they pick or where they choose for us to do the show. But with COVID, that's really changed. So again, Ted picked a park, and so we were able to do that and be, you know, at opposite ends of a picnic table. But now with COVID, I've had to adjust a little bit and use different equipment. But that is the one thing using a portable digital recorder really was sort of almost a random choice, but really worked out to be a good choice. Let's see. One more question also from Louise. What has it been like maintaining the Beyond Bourbon Street crew page? What positive things have come of it? Boy, that's a good question. First of all, I should mention that I get some help. So Marie, my wife, along with several moderators, Andrew and Jennifer Eaton and Lisa Chimola, helped me moderate and admin that group. And so the group would not be what it is without them. So thank you to all of them for that. It's a lot of work. And, you know, we've made some decisions right at the beginning of COVID. We switched so that every post had to be approved. And that's just because tensions were high a little bit. And we were also wary of getting questions every week that just couldn't be answered about, well, are things going to be open at this date or this date? We've also tried very hard to maintain a community that is very much a community and is respectful of everyone. We try to keep politics out of it. We try to keep the sniping out of it. We try to make it a real community, a community that we enjoy being in and that therefore hopefully others will. And so it is a lot of work. It is also a lot of fun. We have made real friends and gotten to know a ton of people through that community. I get messages every couple of days from someone who says, thank you for maintaining this community. We really love it. I think we've done a pretty good job of staying true to the mission, which is to make it a place where we can all share our love of New Orleans. And yes, that means you get questions that people ask over and over. But you know what? If you love New Orleans, you love sharing the answers to those questions. I love, love, love seeing people's memories of New Orleans or new New Orleanians sharing their lens of the city. So, you know, labor of love is an overused term, I guess, but it does feel that way. It's a really great resource. It's a fun place to be. For those of you wondering, if you aren't familiar and you are on Facebook, it's the Beyond Bourbon Street Crew, K-R-E-W-E. It's our free Facebook group. I think we have about 7,000 members now, and it's really active. We get a lot of posts every day, and we get a lot of responses, and we try to keep it fun. We try to put questions in there that are provoking and, you know, about the city. And it's a place for me to share more of my lens of New Orleans with you as well. So I had no idea what it would be like when we started it, much like the podcast. I wondered, you know, who would want to do that, but lots of people have. So it's been really great. So that's 17 questions. There's really more like 24 when you take all the individuals. I hope that is, was interesting for you. This is a short episode. And since I'm recording it in the morning and the kids are now awake and getting ready for school, that's probably good. You know, thank you so much for joining me today. And for those of you that ask questions, thank you for submitting questions. Every time I do this, I worry that I'm going to get no questions. And every time I'm wrong. So thank you for that. When I can, I'll put timestamps in the show notes as well as links to our partners and sponsors. I mentioned Liz Wood. I mentioned Tommy Manzella over at Gulf Coast if you're interested in moving to New Orleans. But so many of you have asked me, hey, I want to visit New Orleans. I can't visit New Orleans. How can I get a little bit of New Orleans in my life? NOLA Boards makes terrific cutting boards. NOLA T-Shirt Club has wonderful shirts at really affordable prices. You can subscribe to their monthly subscription service, or you can just get individual shirts. Coast Roast Coffee Shop over on Magazine is just, Kevin does a great job. That's a wonderful place. The Occasional Wife, once you've moved here, they do estate sales, and they have a shop as well. And they also help you physically move. And I could go on and on. We just have wonderful partners. We're rebuilding our website to make it easier for you to see all of our partners, as well as to search for past episodes. But we'll put links to all of our partners and sponsors in the show notes. And I would ask you to please support them. They make our show possible. And so anything you can do to help them helps us. If you can, support me by becoming a Patreon for the price of a cup of coffee or two each month.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.